This episode of Own the Gray is brought to you by I Am. Discover your unique talents, realize your potential, and align to your path. Take the first step to uncover your life purpose by visiting deborahjones.ca/courses. Welcome to Own the Gray, a podcast to dispel the notion that aging is undesirable and setting new positive attitudes. I'm Deborah Jones, and I believe you can be vibrant and healthy throughout the best years of your life. My next guest is known as a women's mind and body tune-up expert. She's a certified weight loss and health coach and a life coach for women over 50 who want to take a rebellious approach to aging. This rebellious approach means finding alternative ways to stay well, look and feel great, and avoid prescription pad medicine whenever possible. It means adopting the mindset of possibility at any age, letting go of shame and resentment, and exploring the inner world of the soul. She specializes in teaching women how to successfully navigate the inevitable changes that aging brings. Her philosophy is aging happens, but it doesn't have to ruin your life. From rebellious wellness over 50, a warm welcome to Own the Gray, Gregory Ann Cox. I'm really interested in what we're going to be talking about, but first things first, Gregory, it's a very unique female name, and it's no wonder that you lean towards rebellion. Is there a story behind the name?
There's actually a short story. I was born on St. Gregory's Day to Irish Catholic parents, and in those days, they wouldn't have known the sex of the baby, and I don't honestly know whether they decided Gregory for a male or I don't know what they decided. The choice was enhanced by the Catholic Church's teaching about the little really cute story beyond that is my first career was in the culinary world. I was in restaurants forever. And there are five St. Gregories in the Catholic calendar year. And I looked up my St. Gregory, and he was actually a priest who had a community that was very poor. And he used to put on events for them to cheer them up and provide food for them and things. I thought, wow, that's an interesting little connection there.
That is, that really is. And so having that name throughout your life, I'm sure there's been a few questions about it. I imagine that rebelliousness, it's how you were born and it's what you're in. And
yeah,
it's what you're doing. Yeah, it's what you're doing now. And so your website, Rebellious Wellness Over 50, can you tell us what the focus is other than what we can assume?
Sure. I had a business for 8 years called Rebellious Wellness, and I started it around my mid-40s. And I had taken my nutrition certification. I had been in food. It was really a passion to me. So I was a life coach. But I started to write to my list about what I was experiencing as I headed into perimenopause. And I'm a science junkie. I wanted to be a doctor. That didn't work out. But I am constantly researching. So I would just share that with my audience. And more people are asking me, what was I doing and how could I feel better? And it just morphed into this wellness coaching for women. And of course, I got more certifications and studied and things. And then I put it away for a while because there were so many people jumping into the health coaching space that it feln't there was too much competition of not science-based or solidly taught education for people. And I got frustrated. So I started another business, and then COVID hit. And all that time, a couple of years went by, and I just thought, I really miss my health business, my coaching. I miss speaking to women, and maybe I'll start a podcast. And COVID hit, as I said, and I felt like I had to give at least a few people some hope because so many people were depressed and having anxiety attacks and, you know, not eating well and this and that. And so then it became Rebellious Wellness Over 50 because I was over 50 and somebody else had bought the other URL, to be honest. So I had to shift a little bit. But really, 50, midlife, I always say, is the Olympics of change. It starts the Olympics of change. So many things will change, and it doesn't end. Having lived a decade more than 50, I notice, and of course, I speak to people in my business, and I interview so many people who are 60, 70, 80. There's always some change lying in wait, I'm going to say. But my job is to help people be prepared. Now, we don't all age the same. We don't all know that because something happened to my sister, it's going to happen to me. It could, but it doesn't necessarily work that way. But I'm doing my best to disseminate information to give people options, not only for preventive medicine and preparation for changes, but if they're in the middle of something and they're feeling overwhelmed, their body has a mind of its own, what can they do? Where do they begin to take back the power of their physical and mental well-being? So that's what the website grew out of.
And so when I've been on your website, I get the feeling that you have a way to help us plan that path of aging, but there needs to be a way to make it accessible and fun and something that we can do, not as a task, but as something that we incorporate into our life. Is that right? Is that what you're doing?
I hope so. Nobody wants another checklist. We're really good. Women are really good at checklists and checking off boxes, right? But we don't have room on our lists, many of us, for another big task. So, and you used a good word, have some fun with it. Trying to bring things into our lives rather than deprivation and take everything out that we love. It's a matter of weaving in things so that they become the enjoyable thing, not a task any longer. But a walk is even something people feel they don't have time to do some days. Mm-hmm. And yet, if there's a mindfulness within the walking when it's a new thing, and there's a discovery of a bird noise you didn't notice or a tree you didn't notice, or even if you're walking in an urban setting, that mindfulness, I think, if you can bring joy to that or enjoyment to the thing that you're incorporating, your body and your mind will naturally say, I want to do that again. And so, yes, in answer to your question, I'm trying not to have to give people tasks, but rather to invite them to have different experiences that they may not be having fully. They may be doing some of the things necessary for healthy aging, but if they need to take it up a level, how do we make that easy for them?
And so that rebellious part of it, how does that fit in?
I think it is an act of rebellion in this day of prescription pad medicine, as you mentioned, to say, when given a diagnosis or pushed away because there is no diagnosis, it's all in your head. Oh, it's just your age. You'll feel better in a month. Come back. And, you know, it's an act of rebellion to say, no, I need more attention. I need you to listen to me, or I prefer not to have that procedure. What are my alternatives? Most docs in this country have 7 minutes with a patient. And if you're not fully armed and ready to go in there and get yourself heard and get the answers to your question, you're likely to find yourself on the way out of the waiting room going, I don't even, why am I having this? Or why am I getting a depression, antidepressant mm-hmm. medication? Mm-hmm. All of the things that I mentioned may be necessary for some people. Depression is real. Medication can help some people. Procedures are really needed in some cases. But I know, I just literally was reading an article in the New York Times about how women get less healthcare by physicians, both male and female. They tend to be pushed off as not real, their symptoms, their complaints. So we really have to, that's where I say it's rebellious to ask for what you need and to get your health online the way feels good to you.
And so that might be scary for some that aren't used to speaking up for themselves or being rebellious in any way. How do we edge ourselves into taking that power back?
There are two ways. One, if you can bring somebody with you to have that other person who can ask the question you may not feel. I just went with my husband. He's got a knee problem. I went because I want to listen for him because he's the patient. When we're the patient, we're focused on what the doctor's saying, but it's probably not really sinking in, right?
Right.
The other thing to do is, this sounds funny, but rehearse your appointment. Unless you're going to a new doctor, you probably know the way this doctor operates. Write your questions down, maybe put them in order of importance. Like if you say, okay, I have to go see my doc because my blood pressure is up. He said, come in, or she said, come in. What's the most important thing for you to know when you leave that office? If he wants to give you medication, are you comfortable with that? If not, then that's the most important question is, will I have side effects? If so, what are they? So really plan ahead. You don't have to go in with a pejorative attitude. It's not like, hey, you, I don't want your medicine, right? It's how can we work together for the best outcome?
Yeah, those are really good tips. In the things that I've been reading, I know you offer a lifestyle assessment. It's a way to plan for aging in good health. And I liked what you said about making new choices and getting results rather than just relying on hope. And so it's a way of really, the term that I use a lot is taking back your power. Mm-hmm. And I think that lifestyle assessment, is that a tool for that?
Absolutely. For people, everybody seems to love quizzes and assessments. And this one I made fun by doing it online with pictures. But the thing that I'm not the most popular person in the room when they start the assessment, because I ask people before they answer question one, are they willing to tell the truth like it's Sunday? Most people who go to church, they're not lying, at least not on Sunday. it's about not guessing, not rolling the dice and hoping that we're doing enough, because the questions, they're not difficult to answer, but you really have to say honestly, if you're not sleeping, have you tried everything? You might get this too. I have people come to me and I say, I've tried everything. I can't sleep, or I can't lose weight, or I can't eat broccoli. Unless you've tried the thing that the new person sitting in front of you is going to offer you, you really haven't tried everything. And sometimes that brings up some resistance. Well, I really don't want to have a blackout shade because I like the light coming up in the morning. It's a trade-off. Everything that we do is a trade-off. And not everything we don't do is going to kill us. That's not the point. But if we're really honest about the way we live our day-to-day, then we have a better option or a better chance of, again, not making a list of all the things we have to do, but starting with one thing. What's the one thing that bothers you the most today? It'll be different in a month or 6 months, and let's work on that one thing.
That sounds doable. Is that something that you can take us through today?
I could certainly give you a good idea of what it sounds like.
Well, let's do it. Let's do it.
Okay, great. All right. So I'm going to discuss really quickly the power of five, the five pillars that I have come to after 20 years of being a coach, all the research, having done this myself. There are five things that we have to master. They look different for most people. There's no one way to get healthy, but here they are.
Okay.
First one, fall in love with fat. And I know that's going to scare some people off, but fat, healthy fat in our diet is a natural energy booster. It's a craving killer, and it is imperative for the functioning of our hormones. Whatever hormones we have left as we age, whether we supplement or we don't, we need fat in our diet, cholesterol included, to process, for these hormones to speak to the parts of the body, the neurotransmitters, all those things to work together. And for many women that have cravings that are on a low-fat diet, I'm not talking about a super high-fat diet. I'm just saying that some people cut the fat so low that the carb, you know, the blood sugar is going up and down, which we'll talk about in a minute. And that leads to cravings and crashes and lethargy and fogginess, right? So that's number one. Number two is have protein at every meal and snack. Again, this is not a high-protein diet necessarily, but rather than just having whole wheat toast in the morning because you're having black coffee, right? Run a very low carb, low whatever.
Right.
Put something on that. Put a nut butter on there. If you like dairy, have a piece of cheese. Or if you have cereal, some people still like cereal. I'm not a big fan because it tends to be a really big whack of carbs. Put some protein in there. Put nuts if it doesn't have nuts. Have it obviously with some kind of nut milk or regular milk if that's what you like. Okay. If you're going to have a snack, instead of having three cookies, maybe have, peanut butter on celery or a couple of whole grain crackers with a little bit of cheese on it, right? So it's just a matter, because women are notoriously bad at getting enough protein. And protein is, of course, the building block of every cell. Every cell in the body has a receptor for protein. And so we need enough of it to keep everything running.
Okay.
Third thing is, and if you're doing number one and two, you'll have these are really in a circle. You have to imagine them not as a linear prescription. The third one is learn to balance your blood sugar. You do not need a science degree to manage your blood sugar or learn what it is doing in your body. You have to know two things. One, it goes up after you eat. within 90 minutes, it should come back down to whatever your baseline is. Well, Greg, how do I know if my blood sugar's out of whack? If you're hungry still right after you eat, if you need something sweet right after you eat, if you're tired right after you eat, if you get a midday crash, those are all signs that the blood sugar is going way up and then falling down. There was a dietary prescription for a long time that was popular. Eat throughout the day, 6 small meals a day. Mm-hmm. For some people that will work. For others, it doesn't give the blood sugar a chance to fully come back to baseline. So it's just this jagged little line on a graph. Mm-hmm. And we want calm. We only have 4 teaspoons of sugar in our blood on a normal, like if we're normal, totally healthy. So imagine you have 64 grams of carbohydrate between a bowl of cereal and whatever else you have with that. Then your blood sugar is going to go way, way up, but it needs just calm to come all the way down. Don't interfere with it. Don't go have a snack an hour later, right? So those are just little things to think about to help you balance it. And again, fat will do it. Eating fat and protein do not raise your blood sugar.
Okay.
The third one is sleep. No matter what you do, you have to figure out a way to get the right amount of sleep for you. I just read a study. There's about 3-4% of people in the world that can get by on 4 hours of sleep. They're not doing anything bad to themselves. That leaves a lot of us that need 7 to 9 hours of uninterrupted sleep. Other population studies from many years ago, people would sleep in shifts. They would sleep for 4 hours. They might get up at 2 a.m. and do a few things, go back to bed at 4. Our society doesn't allow us to be that way.
Right.
Now, if you can sleep for 5 or 6 hours and take a good nap in the afternoon, that might work for you. But the bottom line is the quality of sleep and the duration. So, and the Power of Five, my freebie, it explains this in great detail. I don't want to take up too much of your time, but there are lots of ways to test if you're not sleeping well. Where do you begin to look at the problem? What's your first point of resolution? Rather than, you know, you don't have to try 19 things. I'm always about what's the first thing we can try. Let's start there. Right.
Right.
And then the last one, again, is it doesn't make me the most popular person in the room, but there's an overwhelming case for movement. We have got to move. We've got to exercise our hearts. And the better, if we do it every day, that's better. I have a favorite person that I've met through doing my podcast. Her name is Annette Cashel. She's in Ireland, and she's a movement maker. Her business is called Movement Makers. Mm-hmm. And she really is the best I've heard describe about moving through the day and how to get movement, more movement into your day and not necessarily long bouts of exercise. And she said, in most cases, exercise is a box to be ticked. And most people think, I've done my exercise today, I can go sit at my computer for 4 hours, then I can sit and have dinner, then I can drive here, and we're sitting. She said, we're active couch potatoes. So we have to learn to increase, not only to exercise our heart, really get some exercise that pumps the heart so that the blood flows and stays flowing as we age, the arteries will tend to harden, but also throughout the day, put something on a higher shelf than you're used to. Carry the groceries from the car rather than letting somebody, you know, I'm not saying don't ask for help. If you need it, definitely ask for help. But try to keep doing some of the things we might not do or we might put off. And if you are, this is crazy, but all of us have to do housekeeping at some point, right?
Yeah.
Do your vacuuming with vigor, right? Do your intentionally move when you're dusting or vacuuming or whatever you're doing. That has also been proven to give people more benefit. They did a study where they separated housekeepers in a hotel, very busy hotel, into 2 groups. And one group they gave a little 20-minute once a week lectures on how much, if they thought about what they did every day, would help them lose weight and stay healthy. And they didn't tell anything to the other group. The first group had improvements in weight. They lost weight. Their heart rates went down, better blood pressure rates. It was crazy, but it was because they said, do it with intention. It's really doing good for your body. And that just, that simple bit. So I'm just saying we could apply that as well.
That's awesome. So a lot of this is about consciously becoming aware of making some changes that will be to our benefit. So rather than thinking of it as checking a box, it's really like a lifestyle change you're suggesting.
It is. And that doesn't sound appealing to some people I know. However, I can say that if any of your listeners are having discomfort of any kind, symptoms such as sleeplessness, fatigue, bloating, fogginess, all of that, you know, whatever it is, and, or even if they're in a diabetic state or they have heart disease already, the alternative to living with those things feels a lot better. And I know this statistic, and it just got worse, and it surprises me, but this will maybe encourage some people to see you or change their lifestyle. 80% of heart disease, 90% of diabetes cases in recent years can be attributed 100% to lifestyle. 100% of those 80 and 90% cases. So 80% of those people with heart disease, it's their lifestyle. It's not their genetics. 90% of those who have diabetes. And now they're finding that the same is true for Alzheimer's. We can lower the risk of getting Alzheimer's and dementia by having a lifestyle that supports health.
And I guess it's never too late to start, or is it?
Absolutely never too late. There have been studies upon studies of people reversing diabetes and heart disease in their 70s, in their 80s, maybe not going back to their baseline health as they were when they were 30 or 40, but certainly no or less medication, greater mobility, greater energy. People tend to get despondent when they get a diagnosis like that, because in the Western medical model, you are a diabetic. You don't have diabetes. There's a big difference. And when people carry the weight of that around with them, it can be debilitating mentally. So my case for asking people to make lifestyle changes is so that they feel better and they can live fully expressed.
So you touched on the mental state, and to think that you're checking a box, or to think that you're making a lifestyle change because you have diabetes, for instance, it doesn't make me feel good to have to do something. And that's that rebellious nature that I've always had, is don't tell me what I have to do, right? And exactly. And so if it's a thought change, what do you recommend to people of how to get through the block that they might have towards making these changes, that they know it's for their good, but there's something in the way? How do you handle that?
You know, I think the person has to know themselves. Some people are extrinsically motivated, outside of themselves. Like a wedding is coming up, that might motivate somebody to lose weight.
Right.
Some people are intrinsically motivated. When I'm ready, I know I can do it. I will stand by my own side and I'll get it done. So if we're extrinsically motivated, we might need to get a coach. We don't want to change, but we know we have to. So let me get somebody outside of myself. If we're intrinsically motivated, maybe it's a matter of running through a list of what might feel better or be better in my life if I were to make these. I'm not saying I'm going to make the changes, but what if I just, you know, and the reality is the reality. We don't know how much time we have. I don't know a single person who says, I can't wait to be immobilized and sit on my couch all day and not see my grandkids and not go to France or wherever it is that we want to go, right? We all have dreams that we want to fulfill. The truth of the matter is, by nature, human beings put things off. We just do. It's why a lot of people don't save money, why a lot of people are willing to put up with, like, well, I don't sleep, but I'm used to being tired. It's just the way it is. You know, I don't know whether you had those cigarette anti-smoking commercials, or on the packs of cigarettes, they would put people with lung cancer and all this, hoping that a visual might motivate people.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just don't look at the reality in black and white. Look at the statistics for diabetes and then look at the side effects of the disease and the medication. Is that what you want for your life? Are you willing? Some people do well for decades on medications. They never have a side effect that really keeps them from their life. So, but I don't know that that would be me, right? How do we know which person we will be among the statistics? So it's just a matter of figuring out who you are in the process of change and how you want to be helped to change.
Yeah. And so you offer lots of different ways for people to get to that point, to find a way that's going to work for them. On your website, you have the lifestyle assessment that they can take. You have a self-study course to identify what's sabotaging your weight loss efforts so that you can get some results. And you also have a book. What's your book called?
It's called Your Genes, G-E-N-E-S, Do Not Determine the Size of Your Genes, J-E-A-N-S. And the book is a myth-busting book. And it was I studied epigenetics many, many years ago. A guy named Bruce Lipton, which a lot of people in your community will know about, talked about epigenetics, studying the cells, the environment around the cells. It lit me up, like I just went crazy. And so I had to dive into that. And I interviewed a couple of people, not him, sadly, I've never gotten to him, but and now it's much more common. I wrote the book, 8 years ago. The whole idea that genes are not predictive of outcome is now getting more and more play.
Right.
But at the time, we really thought that if somebody had diabetes, next person in line was going to get it. If somebody had cancer, they were going to get it, right? Even cancer now, there are so many cancers that have a direct correlation to lifestyle. So again, the book is a myth, but it talks about calories in versus calories out. It talks about fat makes you fat. You know, exercise, the worst, hardest exercise is the best for you. All these things I just took apart because I kept hearing from my clients and I was going through it myself. And really what we talked about earlier, how to go to a doctor and get hurt. Those kinds of things are in the book. And it was written for the perimenopausal, on the cusp of menopause woman, because I had just gone through that. So it's very fresh in my mind. I am going to do a book in 2023. I'm working on it now. That has the title Aging Happens, But Don't Let It Ruin Your Life. And it will update the science, but also the next decade or two will get some attention.
That's great. It's so great when something lights you up, so you delve deeply into it and see what you discover, and then take all that information and assimilate it in a way that makes sense to you, which then will obviously make sense to others. And there's mm-hmm. so many different ways to look at this whole situation of aging, to look at this whole situation of wellness. And as far as I'm concerned, they're all leading us to the same place. It's just a different package. So your book is one package. People that listen to your podcast, there's another package. People that listen to my podcast with your episode on it, that's another package. And so the more that we can share what we're doing in different ways, then we can have an opportunity to reach people in the different ways that we want to be reached. That, as you said, some people need an outside motivation. Some people need to find it from within themselves. So mm-hmm. it looks like you've covered a lot of different aspects on your website, and I'll put the link to that in the show notes. But there's one thing that I saw on your website, which kind of lit me up a little bit when I read it, and it's Divine Wild Coaching. Do you want to share with us what that is?
Sure. The Divine Wild Ride is actually the name of the umbrella for the coaching. And it was born of me wanting to help people understand, explore, get curious about the soul and our inner wisdom and our inner guidance and the idea of a universe and we are all energy. Those so many terms get thrown around. And I knew from talking to my friends, they would think like, I don't even know what that is. And how could I see a psychic? How come, right? It didn't matter whether it was psychics, psilocybin, Akashic record readings, which I was called to learn how to do and did, and which just blew my mind. I felt like I wanted a home for those kinds of conversations. So I designed this business. I thought it was going to be a full-fledged business at the time. And it really, I love it. And it's come back to me, right? It had to be put on a shelf for a little while to mature on its own, like putting a cheese in a cave, I guess.
Yeah.
Until it got a little bit riper in my conscious awareness, right? I knew it inside of me. So I put it all out there. Got the designer. I knew exactly what I wanted and it flowed. And then I thought, but now what? What value am I bringing to the world? I can just keep doing this, but I wasn't really clear whether people's curiosity would be piqued and do they really want this? You know, we all go through this, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wondering whether what we're doing in the world is
sure.
of value to people. but anyway, as I said, recently I felt that I wanted people to know about that aspect of me. And then there was also that aspect of me being out in the world. Like, what would my brother and sister think? It's crazy to even go there, but I don't know whether you ever experienced that, Deborah, but. When I created the Divine Wild Coaching, it's for people that they're not really here for health coaching, but they might need a little of that. They want exploration guidance. They want to know how do I access this? And I'm trying this in my life, but I really don't know whether it's for me. Okay, well, let's find out if it's for you, right? And maybe that's a reading. And maybe that's just conversations of discovery, because as you know, people often have the answer inside of them. Mm-hmm. They don't have a way to bring it forth yet. So those kinds of conversations. So it is a little bit health coaching if people want it, but more it's life coaching for the next level of experience.
I love it. I'm going to explore that a little bit deeper myself. As I said, it lit me up when I started reading about it. So so maybe we'll talk about that sometime.
Yeah.
I like the idea of the lifestyle assessment to ask myself certain questions so I get some clarity on what it is I'm feeling, thinking, maybe where I'm going with my life. And so anything that gives me clarity, I really welcome, because it gets us to start thinking different thoughts and different possibilities to open new doors. You've got so much on your website that can help guide any kind of person to age well. Like the whole thing about aging is it's not a problem we've got to solve, is it? It's not a problem. I mean, it happens to all of us. And so it's about how to make the most of this time and enjoy our life to the fullest, mm-hmm. I think.
Absolutely. And you use the word possibility. I always say the biggest arena for possibility is in the unknown. And so many people are afraid of the unknown. We all naturally immediately might say like, oh, that sounds scary. I don't know anything about that. But where we know things, there is no room for possibility because we already know it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
When we get into a void or a vacuum, or we take a walk in a forest and we're just meandering around, we don't know what we're going to come upon. But what could come to us? Something great could come in that moment.
I appreciate you listening. Thanks so much. Please go to speakpipe.com/Deborah Jones to share what you thought about this episode and what you'd like to hear next on Own the Gray. This episode brought to you by Lunch with a Healer podcast. The best conversations happen when you're having lunch with a friend, especially when one is a healer. Pull up a chair at lunchwithahealer.com.